Good evening. In the news tonight, it's the one-year anniversary of when a grand jury failed to indict police officer Daniel Pantaleo in the death of Eric Garner in Staten Island. Details are emerging on the mass shooting in San Bernardino, California. And evidence shows South Alabama police planted drugs and stolen guns on hundreds of black men, leading to wrongful imprisonment. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Thursday, December 3rd, 2015.
My son's death was caught on video, full coverage.
There are renewed cries for justice on the one-year anniversary of no indictment. That's when NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo was not indicted for killing Eric Garner, the 43-year-old father of six, grandfather of three. Garner died after being put in a chokehold by Pantaleo when he refused to be handcuffed during his arrest on suspicion of selling loose on tax cigarettes. The video of his death was widely viewed. It showed Garner saying, "I can't breathe," 11 times as he was brought to the ground by Pantaleo in a chokehold, a tactic prohibited by NYPD policy. Garner's mom, Gwen Carr, appearing on the Katie Halper show on WBAI on Wednesday, said she expected the cop would have been indicted.
You mean the grand jury didn't see any probable cause? Where is the justice in that? Nobody asked them to try the case just to look for probable cause. That's what a grand jury does. But they didn't indict Pantaleo. The other five police officers had got amnesty.
And the EMT workers who didn't administer CPR at the time were placed on administrative leave. Carr said when they arrived on the scene, Officer Pantaleo waved them off.
This is what I was hearing, that he waved them off. So I would like to see him and those other officers stand accountable for their gross misconduct.
Carr said it would have been a very different story if it was Pantaleo's family, if he were choked to death. She said she speaks out to try and stop this kind of senseless death from happening to anyone else.
I'm definitely doing this because I guess if this hadn't happened to him, you know, I wasn't an activist all the time, but after this happened to my son, it has broadened my awareness of how cruel this world is, how cruel people are to people of color. And I just think that we have a lot of work to do. We have to get out here and we have to make some noise.
This afternoon, the Stop Mass Incarceration Network held a rally at the Staten Island Ferry Terminal. They say no indictment for Pantaleo is a slap in the face to all those who seek justice. It signals a green light that black and brown people have no rights that the police are bound to respect. And there are revelations in Chicago. The police dash cam video, which shows a police officer, Jason Van Dyke, shooting a black teen, Laquan McDonald, 16 times, has no audio. And the videos from the four other squad cars at the scene don't have sound either. Chicago police protocol says all cruisers should have been recording sound that night. The silence is almost sure to figure into the ongoing federal investigation of the case, and it raises questions about whether officers were careless with the recording equipment or, worse, attempting a cover-up. And it was revealed today that Chicago police officer Van Dyke also played a role in the alleged cover-up of another fatal police shooting 10 years ago. This is according to court records in an ongoing civil lawsuit against the city. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
But today is just kind of discouraging.
That's what a San Bernardino mom, Kieran Henderson, told the LA Times after the mass shooting Wednesday by a married couple, 28-year-old Syed Farouk and 27-year-old Tashfeen Malik. They killed 14 and injured 21 others. People in the community are scared.
You can't even be safe enough to take your child to school now. My son, he's only six. He doesn't understand what's going on, so he's thinking everything is okay. But I have to take on the fear and the concern that he doesn't understand yet. So I just, it's kind of sad. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that feels that way. Everybody else is wondering, wow, is it safe for me to take my son to school or go to work? Or can I walk up the street without wondering if somebody is going to have a bad day and want to shoot innocent people? You know what I mean? It's just, it's discouraging. It's sad.
Details are emerging about the shooting. San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Bergwan.
They sprayed the room with bullets, so I don't know that there was any one person that they ultimately targeted. They killed 14 people there.
And the guns used were purchased legally. The attackers fired as many as 75 rifle rounds at the scene. They left behind three rigged together pipe bombs with a remote control device that apparently malfunctioned and had over 1,600 more bullets with them when they were gunned down in their SUV. While California has tough gun laws, there's no restriction on the amount of ammo someone who is licensed can purchase. And this also holds true here in New York, where there's no limit on the amount of ammunition a person can buy. The San Bernardino shooting was the nation's deadliest mass shooting since the attack at a school in Newtown, Connecticut, 3 years ago. That left 26 children and adults dead. MomsRising.org says in the 336 days of 2015, there have already been 355 mass shootings in our nation. They have a petition to demand Congress act to advance gun safety and community safety. It's at action.momsrising.org. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. John Carroll had to go on the run. He's a documentary photographer with the Henry County Report and the Alabama Justice Project. It's a new nonprofit in southern Alabama. He had to flee because some current and retired South Alabama officers gave him files which show that hundreds of black men are languishing in prison because of drugs and stolen guns planted by dirty cops.
Okay, this is what happened. You know, I live out in a very rural environment. Two guys I know show up with a trunk full of records from the police department. And once I look at them, I'm like, you know, holy cow, what are you trying to do? You're going to kill? And they're like, you're our last hope. And I'm like, you're in bad shape. But once I started looking at the documents and I started really understanding what they said and talking to some people, my lawyer advised me that they were going to make an effort, the department and some of the former police chief, is to get me into court and to get an injunction that would allow them to seize the files and shut down our site.
Carroll took his dog and he took out across the country.
I bought an old film bag, like you used to have the little lead bags you go through the airports with, and I put my cell phones in there and wrapped them in aluminum foil where they couldn't ping my phone. And, I headed to a safe place in British Columbia. I spent 2 months in British Columbia, in Seattle. In Seattle, there's a little homeless camp called Nicholsville, and I'd set up my tent, stayed there, and walked to the public library, and I could have wireless access and I could spread everything out.
What Carroll uncovered was systematic corruption. Up to 15 white police officers, part of a neo-Confederate organization.
It's a subgroup of an organization called the Sons of Confederate Veterans. They would systematically go and target young black men of, young men of color.
Carroll said most of the time the men brought up on charges had clean records.
They planted drugs, usually a combination of crack cocaine, powder cocaine, or marijuana, along with a pipe and weapons. And the way the law works in Alabama, even three misdemeanor drug charges trips a felony. So you could take a person with a clean record and suddenly they have felonies and they're serving time in prison.
The head of the Internal Affairs Department in Southern Alabama, Keith Gray, came to the conclusion that there may even be 1,000 or more of these cases of wrongly convicted black men in Alabama.
Because you got to remember, you had a dozen officers doing this. You have to go back and look at all of their arrests for the past, several years.
Carroll and the Justice Project in Alabama are hoping the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Innocence Project in New York will get involved and help the wrongly convicted men now in prison. Carroll's report is posted at henrycountyreport.com. And thanks for this news tip from the Black Panther Party's Marlon X. In other news, several corrections experts and mothers of inmates say New York needs far better oversight of its prison system. They cited cases where mentally ill inmates were abused, improperly isolated in solitary confinement, and one was killed by guards. They testified Wednesday before the Assembly Corrections Committee, calling for independent, autonomous oversight from a new agency where families of prisoners can also take their complaints. Assemblymember Daniel O'Donnell is chair of the Corrections Committee and chair of the Code Subcommittee on Criminal Procedure. He said hearings will resume after State Inspector General Catherine Leahy Scott issues her report on the June escape of two killers from the Clinton Correctional Facility in northern New York. At the hearing, the Prison Guards Union declined to testify and launched a media campaign Wednesday criticizing the Progressive Assembly member. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.